Let's get back to the drive on the home of the Sens, TSN 1200. Now, it's time for Need to Know Basis.
Welcome back to the drive, Labor Sage, AJ Jakubek, and Matthew Conesvita. As we tell you what you need to know that tonight is game one of the Battle of Alberta. Can't wait for it. 9:30 tonight, the Edmonton Oilers in Calgary to face the Flames. It should be a great series. And before that, we'll get primed for it with the New York Rangers in Carolina for game number one as well. Tim Stützle. Gord Miller tweeting out this morning, an update on Tim Stützle. Had an off-ice workout, met with Ottawa's athletic therapist, who is here with Team Canada. He has a knee strain. And while he would like to play, Ottawa will have the final say and will likely say no. The Dallas Mavericks in Golden State to face the Warriors, game one of the Western Conference Finals in the NBA. And a historic day. The unions for the United States men's and women's national soccer teams have ratified a new CBA with U.S. Soccer that included an equal split of World Cup bonuses. The Federation and the two unions announced today. So the men's team and the women's team will get equal pay. And it seems like a long time in coming. But finally, they get to this point. So I think it's a historic day that way. And that's right now what you need to know as we await our next guest, who is on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. I think he's out watching some sports, and I don't know, he's chatting the ear off of Matt Conesvita right now, so I guess he'll get to us when he gets to us, AJ. And that is the director of basketball operations at Carleton, consultant for the Ottawa Senators. I don't know what else is in his title. He'll tell you three or four things that are in his title, but nice of him to join us at 3:06 after he chatted with Matt Conesvita for about 18 minutes. Dave Smart joining us here on the drive. Coach, how are you?
Matt was having, he's asking me how I was doing. He was actually being kind to me and caring and seeing how I was feeling, unlike you two who never really seemed to care.
I just asked you, how are you doing?
Yeah, but it's a token. It's the tone. It's not the words. It's the tone.
Well, you're late. You're late. So if you want to crap on us for being early, you're late.
You guys call me. I don't call you. So if I'm late, it definitely can't be my fault.
Well, you just chatted Matt's ear off. That's why we're late.
No, he told me your dashing story.
Well, if you could refer to me as...
What do you think of Lever Sage being called dashing by Prince Charles?
Prince Charles!
Well, my feeling is the man is very, very kind, and he's not very honest, but he's kind. So it's a positive. There's a positive and a negative there. I mean, it's very nice of him to try to make you feel better.
Right, but now you're questioning Prince Charles? Like, you know exactly what he would mean and not mean? I find that hard to believe.
Well, I know what you look like. So.
That's a good point. So where are you? You're out watching football or what?
He knows what you look like, too. So I just feel like he knows what's going on. And he's just trying to be nice. And okay. That's fair.
Where are you right now?
I'm at my kid's football game.
How's he doing?
Can you hear me?
Yeah. How's he doing?
It's just started.
Oh, okay.
It's just started. You'll be able to tell based on my reactions.
Excellent.
I'm not stoic on the sidelines.
Oh, no. So you're bad sports parent? Is that what you're saying?
I wouldn't say bad. Definitely not good. I mean... No, definitely not good. But I wouldn't say bad. No, I'm not out of control, but I'm not. I don't just sit there quietly. I don't yell anything, but I certainly...
You're not yelling at the kids, fortunately?
No. I mean, I'll say under my breath, the game might be easier if you try. You know, like, hey, Jimmy, you might do better if you just tried. But, you know, other than that, I'm not yelling anything at anybody. But my body language, I don't have strong body language.
No, in fact, you might be one of the weakest people as far as body language is concerned, because you can always tell exactly what you're thinking and feeling through your body language. You just have to watch it for 2 seconds on the sidelines.
Yeah, I do really struggle with the body language, and I do at their games as well.
All right, let's talk some.
But I don't say anything. I'm not that guy. Like, you have to be watching me. So the people who make fun of my body language, I go, seriously, you're here watching your kid and you see my body language. So who's the bigger loser here, me or you?
It's you.
So I want to delay talking about my Phoenix Suns as long as possible. So I'm going to start with Nick Paul. What goes through your mind when you see Nick Paul have the type of performance in a big game, just like he did at the World Championships when they won gold, to help the Tampa Bay Lightning defeat the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Well, I'm super happy for him. Tried to be the first person to text him as soon as the horn went, so that I wasn't one of the 2,000. I was hoping to be the first, but I couldn't have been happier for him. I mean, I just think, you know, like you guys know my feeling about Nick as a team guy and as a person, but also as a player. I just don't think people, you know, now all of a sudden they see it, but I don't think people understand the talent he has, and I think that now they do. I think, you know, I mean, is he a top six forward on a championship team? No, but he's pretty good player on a championship level team. I'm not saying they're going to win the championship, but they are a championship level team.
Well, and I think that's the issue here for, you know, Ottawa fans or people that believe in that you need those type of players, that Ottawa's not at the level yet where a player like Nick Paul can really stand out and you see his worth. He goes to Tampa and, you know, I thought he had a really good first round series, even though he didn't score, because he was doing so many of the things, taking some big draws, killing penalties, doing all the things you have to do to win when you're in that spot. And the problem is that for Ottawa, you got to get to that spot first. And when you get to that spot, a whole bunch of people are like, well, you can go out and get a third line guy when you need him. Well, yeah, but you have him right now and you didn't keep him. And so I think we're all watching that game just thrilled for the guy that has persevered over a lot of hardships to get to where he is and deserves that moment.
Yeah, I think it's awesome. But I mean, and I agree, he's a third line player based on skill, but he was playing over 18 minutes a game, like at least a number of the games.
Yeah, he played 22 like in game seven.
Yeah, like, so he averaged, I think, around 19 minutes a game. That's a lot of minutes for a third line center. A lot of minutes. So as much as he is the third line, he's playing a lot of minutes on a team that beat a really good hockey team. And again, listen, Joseph was a good pickup. He's a good player. So I don't want to make it about that. But what I will say is Nick, I said it from day one, Nick is special. And I just don't think, unless you're in the room every day, you can appreciate just how special he is. And I think now he's shown it. I mean, even last night, he just looks bigger. I don't know, it's weird, but he just looks he's a big man. He was big with Ottawa, but don't you find he looks like he's just a big, big guy who can really move out there with Tampa?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, he's the type of guy, right? Tampa Bay traded for him for a reason, because they know what wins at playoff time, and it's while they're giving up some points, they're obviously knowing that they have the points, right, in terms of their top guys, and a guy that can provide that type of size, that moves, that can contribute defensively but also chip in the odd goal, and you know, just a guy that can raise his game for a big game as well, right? So probably a win-win trade in the end. Although, you know, from an Ottawa Senators standpoint, this is a guy that you're probably going to hope that you can acquire once you become a playoff team. But I'm just happy for Nick because he bet on himself, right? This is a guy that said, you know what, I'm going to bet on myself. I think I can do better than this on the open market, and he's probably going to get more on the open market than he was asking for, maybe in negotiations. And I say good for him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think – I agree with you, AJ. The only thing I don't agree with that is I don't think he was trying to bet on himself. I think he felt he deserved a certain amount, and I think he felt it was a fair number. And I think he wanted to stay in Ottawa. And, you know, like as it turned out, that number will probably be greater. Like the number he thought was fair, it'll probably be higher now. You know, so, I mean – I'm not sure he bet on himself as much as he bet, and or he didn't just take the major discount, and it's going to work out really well for him. And you know, and it's good for him. I mean, I just think he's a great player. I think if they had kept him with Josh and Drake and Shabby and Brady and like just the character they have in that room. And again, Joseph's great. So I don't want to downplay, but he's not Nick. I mean, he hasn't been around as long and he's just not as big, but he's been a pleasant surprise and he's a good player. Like, it's not like we got nothing for him.
Yeah. You have to look at those two things separately, like what Nick Paul is and what Matthew Joseph is. Like those are two different things. Now, how much have you watched of the World Hockey Championships and Thomas Chabot and Drake Batherson company?
A little bit, not a ton. I've been busy. I was away all weekend, 12 hockey games in 3 days, so I didn't have a ton of time. But I was following it.
12 games in 3 days.
And I've been talking to Drake a little bit.
Okay, well, what's his experience like? Other than I want to hear about the 12 games in 3 days, but I want to hear what Drake thinks as well.
No, I mean, he's having a great time. Drake's going to make a good have a good experience wherever he goes. He has a very positive outlook on things, and I think he likes the experience. I think he thinks Finland's pretty cool. I mean, I worry it's only through text, so it's hard to get tone, but you don't get the positive tone just like. Talking to you guys on text is way better than the negative tone I get from you. But, it seems like he's having a pretty positive experience. But I've never heard him not. So it's a little deceiving because he's so positive.
I wouldn't say all of our texts are negative.
No, not all of them.
No, your tone's just loud. Like, no, speaking to you, your tone is terrible. So when you text, it's hard to decipher what your tone is. I assume it's negative.
Okay, so when we don't...
it sound like we're the same guy.
When we don't see you, should we assume that your body language...
And who's... AJ, sorry. Who's more insulted by the fact that I'm making you sound like the same guy? Like, are you more insulted that I'm making you sound like...
I think
like
I am.
Or is Lee... I feel like he's insulted and you're insulted, which I find ironic that you both feel insulted.
Yeah, you're dead. AJ completely believes that he is more insulted right now, which I, you know, that's his opinion. That's great. And how much of the rest of the NHL playoffs have you watched?
Quite a bit.
Okay, so
I mean, it's been great hockey. It's been fun hockey, and
just maybe an overall thought of teams kind of getting to that next level and showing. You know, Tampa coming back and winning game 6 and 7. Florida doesn't look like they've reached that next level yet, even though they're only down a game in the second round. And just about the difference in some of the teams raising their game to another level.
Yeah, I mean, I think every team's built different. And I think some teams are built as a playoff teams and some teams aren't necessarily built as playoff teams. But I'll tell you, That McDavid show in Game 7, like just overall, that was pretty impressive. I mean, because I don't think that team, I've said it before, is necessarily built like a playoff team. But when the best player in the world or the most talented player and probably the best, debatably the best, definitely the most talented, decides to do what he did, it doesn't really matter whether you're built for the playoffs. You're going to have some success. Now it's going to change in this round, but we'll see how they respond.
with a team like Toronto that's had six straight playoff failures, and the first couple, they weren't expected to go deep into the playoffs. And yeah, they played better against Tampa Bay than, say, they did against Columbus and Montreal, but the result is still the same. They don't get out of round one. How do you handle a situation like that? I don't think you blow it up, but at the same time, I'm not sure tinkering is going to be what helps you. Or is, can you learn to win when you lose so much at the first hurdle?
Yeah, I think Toronto's a tough one because, as you said, like, they weren't really expected to win the first couple of times. So is that a bad thing that they lost? I mean, they weren't expected to win. It's the middle series that they sort of gave away and lost that you go, like, how do you respond to those? Because, honestly, this year, wasn't it kind of a pick 'em? I mean, that's a pretty good Tampa team.
Yeah, absolutely.
They still lost, but it's pretty much a pick 'em situation. And so, like, do you overreact to a really bad draw, you know, or a really tough draw? How many playoff teams would they have beaten if they had drawn them in the first round? How many do you think?
Like, yeah, I think most of them in the Eastern Conference, personally.
10 or 12 overall of the 16?
Yeah, easily.
You know, so do you blow it up when you're still probably one of the six best teams in the league?
But you've never won that first round one with the core that you have. That's the issue.
Right. So do you make that ridiculous change that sometimes you have to make? And I call it ridiculous because it's blaming the person you shouldn't blame, which is the coach. But maybe you get rid of the coach and bring in a Trotz. And even though it probably doesn't make any difference whatsoever, like in reality, in their minds, the players' minds, everybody's minds, they're starting fresh and it is a difference maker. So they play with a different swagger, a different confidence when they get to the playoffs, even though there's really no real change that's being made. It's not like he's going to be that much better a coach. But there's going to be a belief that he is, so it might get them over the hump. So, and they're that close, so who knows? Something like that could be the difference.
So let me ask you about a coaching change as opposed to one of the core guys being moved. What would resonate in the room, in your experience, more?
I honestly think that what would resonate more, good or bad, would be one of the core guys. But it could be really bad.
Like, it's a risk.
Like, it could be. Yeah. It's a huge risk. I think they've got players. Like, my opinion is they have players. Like I said, do I think a coaching change is going to bring them a better coach? No. But it doesn't matter. It's like a placebo. Like if they believe it, then they're going to play with more confidence. They're going to play with more belief. Or more importantly, they're going to lose the doubt that they have, but it's not really going to be a better coach. It's just going to be them believing that change is big and there's less risk because you still have a top five team to go on the ice every day with.
See, you don't think Barry Trotz would make a difference there? Because, like, this is my point of view on things. If you're going to fire the coach, and I don't think they should just go out and fire the coach and then say, okay, we're firing the coach, and we're going to find the best guy to come in and replace him. I believe in this type of scenario, you say, okay, we think we're going to keep the coach, but if we know we get a better coach that will come in, we'll make that move, and then we'll fire the coach. And to me, the one guy that's out there that definitely checks all the boxes is Barry Trotz. Like, if Barry Trotz wants to come to Toronto, I'm sorry, I'm firing the coach.
Yeah, I don't disagree with, like, bringing in a Trotz and firing the coach to make an impact on the team. I'm just not sold that you're right that he's a better coach. It just might be a better situation because people are going to, like you, like the players, are going to believe that he's a difference maker. I don't think he's probably that much of a difference maker. And I'm not trying to overstate how good the coach is or overstate how good Trotz isn't that good. I'm just saying, like, it's such a fine line, but the belief is more important. So, like, I don't necessarily think that when people go, well, that guy's a better coach than that guy, going, like, I've coached for a long time, and I'm not really sure. When you get to that level, I'm not really sure you're right on this.
Like, yeah,
I think the circumstance is the circumstance, and some people go into a good circumstance. Like all the best coaches, the circumstance is what separates their record, not their abilities, but the circumstances. All the great coaches. And I think they had a really good coach.
Yeah. The only thing I'll say about Trotz is, and I'm not going to go on this for a long, long time, but I just think, like, when I talk to guys that I know in that profession, they always bring him up, and he's always right at or near the top of the list. And number two, when you look at, because you can look at him in Washington and say, okay, there maybe 5 or 10 or 20 different coaches at that time could have got the Capitals, you know, they just kind of needed to mature as a group, and he was the guy that kind of got them to buy in. I get that. But, you know, I could understand someone saying, yeah, you know what, there's probably a few different coaches that could have led them to a cup that year when they won it. But when I look at the Islanders and I look at 100 goals that they took off the goals against as soon as he got there, and 3 years in a row and 7 straight years, he got out of the first round with a team in New York that, quite frankly, I look at, you know, outside of Matt Barzal, it's a good team, but I don't know if it's a team full of great individuals. And that's where I think, you know, Barry Trotz was able to really work a little bit of magic. Just one man's opinion.
Yeah, I'm not even fully disagreeing with you, but I just think, you know, if you ask the players on the Leafs their opinion on their coach, they'd probably be thrilled, or he'd be gone by now anyway.
Yeah.
You know, like,
they got to figure out something, though, to do something to change, because if you stay still and you keep expecting it to somehow change and the luck of the draw and all that stuff. That they came up against Tampa this year, yeah, bad draw. Should have beaten Montreal. Should have beaten Columbus. Should have beaten a lot of teams before that. Never.
Probably should have beat Boston, yeah, at least the last time.
Never did. So when you're 0-10, and that's where I wanted to kind of end the hockey discussion before AJ asks you what the hell happened to the Phoenix Suns in Game 7, because I can't wait for the answer. But when your team is 0-10 in games to clinch a series, that's a disturbing number. I don't care who you're playing.
No question. I'm not saying they shouldn't make a change. I'm the one who brought up the fact that they probably should make a change. I'm just saying that I'm not sure it's a real upgrade. It's just in the minds of the players and the people who are on the ice, it would be a huge upgrade in confidence. Because they got to be in a bad spot right now in terms of their mindset. Like, they're just, if you go out in a sport and you're waiting for something bad to happen, something bad's going to happen. And that's where they're at, clearly, right now.
All right.
They need to make a change. And if they get Trotz, I think that's a great change. Like, because, as you said, AJ, he's considered a high-level coach, and they're going to believe he's going to make a big difference. I'm just saying, I don't think after a month of practice they're going to go, oh, my God, I've never been taught hockey until now. I don't think that's going to be the case. I think they're just going to feel like when we get to the playoffs, this guy has experience, and he's going to give us something different. And even if he doesn't give them something different, they're going to believe it is something different.
I hate changing the subject, but I have to ask about the collapse of my Phoenix Suns, not just in Game 7, Lee, but in Game 6 as well. They lose the last two games by 57 points when it matters, against a very good Dallas team. But I guess two-part question, what went wrong and what do they need to do now to ensure that something like this doesn't happen again?
And before you answer, AJ's tone right there, you're right, Coach. I now understand exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, no. So it's a given at this point. If you have bad tone all the time, then no one really like it.
It's just a dejected tone at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, anyway, I'm dejected, not at Dave. I'm dejected because my team since 1988,
I know,
stunk the joint out when it mattered most.
Well, I think one of the things that is an issue with both game six and game seven is, I mean, Chris Paul clearly was injured. I mean, he hasn't said he's injured. Others have said he was injured, but he was clearly injured. He could barely move. So, I mean, that is an issue. And that's not going to change with his age and, you know, like, I mean, with his age, he's going to get beat up. It's as simple as that. I don't think he should retire, but he can't be one of their big three anymore. It would be great if he was their backup point guard. And I think he's one of those veterans, unlike, say, Carmelo Anthony and guys like that, who could be a really good backup. You know, so I think that's part of the problem. They don't really have a big three, because even though their other two are young and don't get probably not as injury prone, he is extremely injury prone, and it's only going to get worse. So they got to do something there. He's still a great player, and he's still going to be a great leader for them, but they need something else. And then, you know, like, I just don't think Dallas was given enough credit. I'm not sure they can get it done with Golden State, but, you know, like, I think Luka, he was terrible at the start of the series, even though he was putting up crazy numbers, because he basically never let Brunson or Dinwiddie touch the ball. So they were non-existent because of Luka. Well, all of a sudden, Brunson started touching the ball a lot. And then in the last game, Dinwiddie had the ball a ton. And Dinwiddie's really good. Like, he's another Brooklyn Net that, like, Jerome Allen and what's his name in Indiana, who they got rid of, who are really, really good players. And, like, if they allow those other two guys to touch the ball a ton on top of Luka having it in his hands the most, Golden State's going to have a tough time with them. Now, if it becomes the Luka show, they have no chance. They have no chance. But if Brunson's averaging 20 and Dinwiddie's averaging 16, Dallas are going to be tough to beat. They're a very good basketball team, and it's not like their lack of size is going to be hurt that badly by Golden State. And I also think you forget, like, Luka. I mean, I saw Luka playing in Europe when I was in Turkey on my sabbatical year, and he was 17 years old playing in EuroLeague. Like, there are full Coke cans being thrown at the refs, and it seemed like it was at the refs, but I feel like it was at his team as well. In Turkey, in a EuroLeague semifinal, two games, and he's on the floor as a 17-year-old. Then his team won EuroLeague when he was still a teenager. I think he was 19, might have been 18, but I think 19, and he was the MVP of the tournament. I'm just telling you, nothing he sees in the NBA is anything like I saw in Turkey those 2 days. Like, nothing. I was in Turkey. I was with the team, like, at all their practices, following their team, and I didn't wear their colors during the game. And I was in their VIP room not wearing their colors, and two guys came up to me and were going to beat the living crap out of me, thinking I was not with their team. And I was actually with their team. Someone had to come in and go, no, he's with the team. He's actually at all the practices. And then they gave me for not wearing their colors. Like, there's Coke cans, there's batteries being thrown. Like, it's chaos. So anything he sees now, you know, like Devin Booker knocking the ball out of his hands, that's he's not getting intimidated by any situation. There's absolutely no way. And he's really good. So the combination isn't great.
So I'm when I was watching those games, and in particular the first half of Game 7, like, I was like what Luka was doing was incredible, right? And you're saying, okay, how do you even stop this guy when he's doing step back threes at his size and he's draining them? So like there's the defensive end. And I could live with that. The problem for me was watching Phoenix go and try and answer when things got tough and all of a sudden they got behind and it felt like they were going up and jacking up these contested terrible shot after terrible shot. And you're thinking, like, what are you guys doing? Like, this doesn't look like a team that went to the finals. This doesn't look like a team that has played through adversity before. That was the thing that troubled me so much. It just felt like they were completely out of sorts on offense.
Yeah, they're a funny team, though. They did it on defense all year, and they just have a weird personality to them. And when Paul isn't playing well and steadying them, I mean, I'm a big Bridges fan, but he's very emotional. And then when they got to go to Payne, he does some really good things at times, but my God, there's some craziness going on all the time, even when he's going good. So I think what happens is, you know, your leader can't get it done, and you know the other guys who are going to have to pick it up aren't necessarily that stable in terms of their personality and the way they play, and then people start panicking. And, you know, like, Booker is, he's a great talent, but you remember LeBron early on, you know, like, didn't exactly get it done early in his career when it mattered, against the Celtics, against the Pistons. And then all of a sudden he had those 25 or 28 straight points against the Pistons in the playoffs in the Palace. And then that was the year that he became a different guy. Like he struggled against the Spurs. Like he just, his lack of real toughness showed up until he hit rock bottom. And then when he hit rock bottom, and I say rock bottom for one of the two or three best players to ever play the game, after that, he became really clutch, really tough. I think Booker is kind of in the same spot. He doesn't necessarily get it done all the time when it matters. But, like, this is kind of a turning point. He's either going to get it done or he's going to have a really bad year. But I think he's going to have hit rock bottom, and I think he's going to get it done at a real high level and when it matters starting next year. I mean, is he going to be LeBron? No. But is he going to be a guy that you're afraid to play against in the playoffs? Yeah. And you know, like, I think Tatum will be that guy through the playoffs as well. He wasn't great in the second half yesterday, but I think he'll get back to what he was in the last series. But he's gone through it where he hasn't been good when it matters. And I think now he will.
Speaking of that other series, I want to move to it because it's not like I can't remember a playoff game where I saw a team win three of the four quarters and be a plus 14 after those three quarters and lose by 11. That's the third quarter for the Boston Celtics last night. Lose 39-14 in that third quarter alone. And, like, was that halftime adjustments? Was that Boston just being really bad, Miami being good, or what?
Well, I think Miami's really good. I think they're really good defensively. They're really tough. They, you know, we talk about the NHL teams that are playoff teams and that aren't playoff teams. I'm pretty sure when you bring in PJ Tucker, what are you saying? When are we trying to win? You're trying to win in the playoffs. So you're trying to win, you know, like you've got a lot of guys on that team mm-hmm. who are pretty prideful on the defensive end. And like, they're not fun to play against. And they've got enough offensive firepower that when Tucker doesn't score hardly at all, it doesn't matter. He just makes, like, it's 2.5 hours, eh, of that. Like, that's what Tatum is dealing with. And even Brown with Butler. Butler, like, I mean, he is something, eh? Like, I know he scored 41, and that's what people talk about. That's not his strength. His strength is he's a nightmare to play against most of the time. So, but Tucker, like, Tatum is dealing with a guy who is just not fun to play against. I'm not saying he won't score 35 in a game because he's that good, and if he gets going, like, Tucker is still not athletic enough to get to a shot and things like that. But it's hard to play well consistently against someone who doesn't ever give you anything easy. And Tucker just, he refuses to give anybody anything easy. And it gets tiresome after a while. Like, Tatum had 21 in the first half and then had six turnovers on, what was it, two for seven shooting in the second half. It gets difficult. Like, it gets mentally difficult to deal with. And they've got guys like that. And even their starters. And, I don't know if they're that much worse with no Lowry. I think if they had Lowry 5 years ago, they're way better with him. But he's getting old. So as much as he plays hard, there's limits to what he can do. So they're almost, in a lot of ways, with Vincent, just as good, if not better. So I don't know. I mean, adjustments, I think there's a lot of things that happen there. Like, Miami hadn't played for roughly a week, so they were probably not really ready to go. Boston were ready to go because they had just finished a seven-game series, but then they probably, with travel, hit a bit of a wall physically. And then Miami's tough matchup. I think it's going to be a great series, but Miami's a tough matchup.
There's been a lot of blowouts in these playoffs. Like, the last couple of years, it felt like, as a fan of hockey and a fan of basketball, it felt like the playoffs were better in the NBA than the NHL. And that first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, which is generally always good, was a lot better than what we were seeing in the NBA because we were getting a lot of blowouts. Is this just kind of cyclical, one of those strange years? Or are you seeing something, why there's a bunch of blowouts? Just curious to get your take on that.
Well, I think the way the game's played, it leads to more blowouts now with teams taking what do they average, 512 threes per team per game or something? Like,
that's the exact number, yeah.
Is that the exact number?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't have a computer in front of me.
I know.
Pretty good. That's stuck in my head. But, like, it's when you're shooting that many threes and both teams are shooting that many threes, it's hard to have a close game because one team is generally going to get hot and one team is generally going to be cold. And yes, defense plays into it and certainly shot selection plays into it. But you know, when you're shooting that many threes, you know, confidence comes into it, a lack of or getting hot. And again, there's not a lot of teams out there who are combining both. I think, you know, that's why I think Boston and Miami could be tough in the final, just because they combine it a little bit more than most teams do, and that's why I think we won at Carlton, is because we didn't shoot a million threes. We shot a decent amount, but there were only certain types of threes that we shot, so we weren't gonna have that bad game. Like, I think a lot of like at our level, or at the college level with in the NCAA, but certainly at the U Sport level, these teams, like, and I mean, I'm sure you got, AJ, you know who I'm talking about because I'm not allowed to say anything negative, but these teams that just go out and jack a million threes every game and they live and die by the three, you're not winning three games in 3 days doing that because you're going to have a bad day. And there's a lot of U Sport teams who everybody goes, oh, they've been top five, top 10 every year. They're right there every year. And I'm going, yeah, they could beat anybody every year, but they're never winning the championship. Never. As long as they play that way, they will never win the championship because they live and die by the three. The difference in the NBA is it's the best of seven. So you can still win doing it because you only need to win 4 out of 7 games. And you don't have to win back-to-back-to-back games, but that's why there's blowouts. You know, like, I find it laughable watching some U Sport teams play, though, because it's like they forget that they have to play three games in 3 days. Have you ever seen a team be hot from the three-point line three straight games 3 days in a row? It does not happen against three different opponents. That does not happen. So here's my advice to the 50 or the both the men's and women's side, to all the coaches: don't live and die by the three and then plan to win a national championship, because it ain't happening. It just ain't happening. You're going to have a bad game, and you're going to lose a game that everybody thinks you're going to win. And you might win 7 out of 10 against that team, but you are not winning 3-3. AJ, what do you think of that?
Well, it doesn't matter what he thinks, because here's the thing. We do have another couple of minutes, but unfortunately you lost 8 seconds where we didn't hear you. And that I can't believe it was only 8 seconds. So, well, unfortunately, your time's up.
Can you text me what word I said? What, did I say something wrong?
Yep.
Yes,
AJ,
you did.
Did I say something
yes,
wrong?
You did. Well, I don't have a problem with it, but
you did.
The CRDC does.
So Matt cut it out, so no one else heard it. Right?
Correct.
Okay, so no one knows what we're actually talking about right now.
Yeah, you said a bad word. It got cut out on the air in the middle of the interview. You lost 8 seconds of your time.
So I don't know what I said either. That's a problem.
Well,
I got to be careful.
You think? This is only about what was the number? 512? The 512th time that we've told you.
All right. Can you thank Matt for me?
Yeah, we will. He's not talking to you anymore. I can't believe he's playing Boston Levi for you. Thanks, Coach. Always appreciate the time.
Right.
See you, Dave.
Coach Dave Smart on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. Gabriel Pizza, the official pizza of the Ottawa Senators. It's always a time with Mr. Smart. Back with more of The Drive on TSN 1200.
Let's get back to The Drive on the home of the Sens, TSN 1200.
Welcome back to The Drive. Lever Sage, AJ Jack, Quebec, Matt Conesvita. Coming up at the 4 o'clock hour, Al Sharon. Join us. Talk about a big rugby game coming up in July. I think our friend Keith is going to call. He's not going to be very happy today.
Oh, and you know what? Keith's calling?
I'm expecting Keith. Matt said he called earlier, and we're expecting to hear from Keith in the next hour. I don't think he's going to be very happy with no deal done with the CFL.
Well, it's stupid.
And the PA. I don't know what side he's on. He's probably on the side that we're on. Just get back on the field.
Yeah. There's no, when it comes to labor negotiations, I don't pick sides.
Well, this one for me, I'm not picking the side, because when you don't play, you lose a whole year and you come back the next year and you start in September and you play 14 games.
And not all of those games, right? I mean, Vancouver, BC Lions were playing in front of 12,500 max.
Yeah.
Now, maybe in the previous couple of years, you would have said, well, that's not much of an issue. But they were selling those games out.
Mm-hmm.
Like when we went to Vancouver, the game was technically a sellout with 12,500 people. They were playing in front of 15,000 here. So, yeah, it's they're not bringing in a lot of revenue. And I get from a player, I totally get the concerns from a player standpoint, especially about signing a long deal. But at the same time, like, they're not going to, like, some of the asks to me are just like, well, we want to have this thing so that the CBA ends 30 days before. Well, no, it's not the way it works. They're not going to, if you want to strike, you're going to have to basically give up something. And if the CBA expires 30 days before, well, everyone's going to sit at home and they'll have the leverage to put the fans, right? That's who, to put the fans in the same bind that they're being put in right now. So it shouldn't be easy for you just to strike. So no, I do not support that one. I do not support the league putting out their deal out publicly. Because I knew, even before I read everything about it, they're going to highlight all the great things about their deal. And that is not going to help in terms of negotiations. All it was going to help was to try and help the give themselves a pat on the bat, pat on the back, little PR job. So smarten up both sides and get back playing, because the league is not exactly the National Football League right now, where you're talking about billions of dollars. We're talking about a league that didn't play for a year, that came back last year and barely made enough revenue. Smarten up and figure it out and get back playing.
The fans of each team have had a chance since the end of the 2019 season to see their team seven times. Seven home games. Right?
And for many fans...
It's 2022. Seven times.
And for many fans, I know some hardcores, for example, that went to one or two games last year because they weren't comfortable with COVID and all that kind of stuff, right? There were probably some that didn't go to a game last year.
I'm sure there were.
Get back playing.
580 CFRA news update. We'll have what you need to know, and we will get into hour number three of the drive here on TSN 1200.